Joining me in this episode of the Neil Wilkins podcast is Doug Reifschneider. Now, Doug is the CMO at Chief Outsiders. We're going to hear a lot more about that organization as we go into this conversation. I've been looking forward to this one. Doug is an advocate of the difference between what he describes as the big M and the little M of marketing. So Doug is totally speaking my language. And interestingly, Doug talks a lot, and a lot of his work is around how to avoid random acts of marketing. And oh my goodness, don't we see that everywhere? Doug's mantra, which I'm going to start with when we get into conversation, is find a need and fill it. So we're going to go there too. So welcome to the episode, Doug.
Thank you very much, Neil. Pleasure to be here.
I mean, you are just by that entry point there, that definition there, you are so my kind of marketer. You really are, because everything that's describing are the things that I'm seeing marketers and business development and entrepreneurs and business owners really tussling with right now. It is that difference between the big M for marketing, the strategy, and the little M, which is what most people think marketing actually is. Yeah. How are you kind of seeing this play out right now?
Well, it's sometimes frustrating to me, because when I go back to my roots and where I learned about marketing is really like the donut principle. You find a need or find a hole and fill it. So many people, including some entrepreneurs, you know, have a product or a service and they just assume people need it, and they decide to sell it and cram it down people's throats, and maybe they did or they didn't, et cetera. And that's an exaggeration, of course. But the entrepreneurs that figure out that like they came up with an offering that filled somebody's need or pain point, they're the ones that typically succeed. But even they can fall into the trap of, okay, I've got my offering, it fills this need, it satisfies this pain point for this group of people. I must need a website. I think I need a brochure for a conference I'm going to go to next month. I need some, social media. Maybe I'll hire a social media intern. That's what we call random acts of marketing, because they're then taking their approach where they found the need and they're filling it. But to propagate or to build on that, they're not doing anything strategic to help them really achieve what we call a growth engine, the Chief Outsiders, so that they understand the customer, the needs they fill, who they are, how to approach them best, and how to manage all the what we call the little M marketing, which is all the tactics, before they get into the strategy. And it's basically a ready, shoot, aim approach that most people take. And it's really better to, you know, be strategic about where you're focused on, so you know where to go forward.
How have we fallen into this trap? Because it feels to me like it is a trap. It's almost like we've become our own worst enemy. Is it down, do you think, due to the kind of time pressures? Are there financial pressures? What do you think are the key triggers here that have kind of stimulated this?
Well, I think it's multiple fold. We probably spend an hour on this, Neil. First of all, of late, we'll say in the last 10 years, it's the sexiness of digital media. Everybody, I mean, there are digital experts out there, and I'll even take another Neil Patel, who's arguably one of the best marketers in the world, and he does get into strategy and stuff, but I would dare say he started out very strategic because he was an SEO marketer, and he built things, and he's learned, he's taught himself, and ultimate respect for the man and the purpose, and I learned a lot about SEO from his, you know, YouTube videos and whatnot. But the point is, and I had a conversation with a peer of mine just the other day, it's interesting how when somebody gets out of college now and they get to get a seat in digital marketing, an agency or a company or something, and they're going to be like cubbyholed in the SEO, and then somebody else is doing SEM, somebody else may get to do print, somebody else maybe do sales enablement, things like that. And they tend to get cubbyholed, and then they learn these tactics that nobody ever teaches them the strategy, even if they potentially had a marketing management or marketing 101 class in college that taught them about the 4 P's and all that sort of thing. And so I think that's the first trap of recent years, is just it's just easier to be tactical, and we've got to advertise this thing in some way, shape, or form. Mm. The other piece is what we find at Chief Outsiders a lot, and this is with B2B companies. A lot of B2B people are those entrepreneurs that found that need, and they were the entrepreneur that did the selling, and they did the business development, and through relationships, especially for the last 40 years, but up until the last 10, it's been less important, but still important. And they're sell, and they get to a point, they reach a plateau. And then they go, I need to operate the business. I've got to talk to my CFO. I've got to do this and that. And so they hire a salesperson All right. Salesperson takes them up a notch, and then they hire more salespeople, sell, 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 until they get to a point where they can't, they plateau. They can't sell anymore. And they finally realize, maybe we need some material for that conference we're going to. The sales team needs to be enabled with materials. Maybe we need a website. So we've got something going on online. And we tend to build a lot of growth engines for B2B companies because of that, because they've done sales, 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 and not any real marketing. And as a classically trained marketer, what frustrates me is this managing the sales team as part of the marketing function. Like, sales is one of the elements in promotion of the four P's: price, place, product, and promotion. And sales is in there. And sales really should be part of the marketing function. It kind of goes also, this is another place we could go as a tangent. There's chief growth officers, chief sales officers, chief marketing officers, chief brand officers, chief strategic and whatever brand officer, right? There's all these C-suite names. But at the end of the day, in my opinion, it's all just chief marketing officer to me. It's a matter how you skin it and which duties you give them as part of their oversight and what they can control. But a good marketer is going to understand all of that and get into the strategy first and then the execution second.
It's just, there's a real purity here, isn't there? Just Doug, the way that you're describing that, because that's a very, it is a very traditional, but it's a very logical, theoretically and science-based approach that you're advocating here. And I think most of us have, you know, within business, let alone within marketing, have been so distracted. And again, like you, I've been talking to many people recently who have just like, oh yes, that is what marketing was meant to do. We've kind of just sort of lost it. And I suppose it is the pressure of time, the kind of almost the change of influence and responsibility, with sales being seen as the, well, it's the quick fix. We get some more sales, we get some more revenue, then we'll be in business. And I yeah. guess when times get tough, the first thing that goes is that longer term sort of brand development, if you call it that, because it can be seen as a bit of a luxury, even though you and I would say, well, no, that's actually the, right. the foundation of it. But of course, anybody else in any other team, particularly CFO, is going to say, yeah, but we need this month's numbers. Right. It's a hard one, isn't it, to just keep banging that drum and expecting yeah. everybody to buy into it. I mean, do you feel hopeful, though? Do you feel that we can get this right?
Well, I do. And I'll even back up a little bit to further answer your first question. And I grew up more in a B2C world. And that's to your point, the pressures of now forced those B2C marketers to go right into, like, I can't tell you how many agencies I've talked to over the years that the first thing they want to do is create that TV commercial, right? TV, video is still important. But you're exactly right that the pressures create us going there. But if you can actually step back, you know, close the curtain, step back and start figuring out, and this goes to the growth gears, the primary concept we use at Chief Outsiders for growth, for establishing a growth engine, because as it turns out, marketing can be a process. That's one of the primary concept that we help our customers grow their or build growth engines is with the growth gears at Chief Outsiders. And there are three gears in the growth gears. And the first one is insights, and it's learning about your customers, your competition, and your company. So learning about your company, do you have mission, vision, values? What kind of culture do you have, et cetera? It's helpful to know all that to fit into how you're going to sell your product to your customers. Understanding who your customers are, what they want, what their pain points look like, what are their interests, their hobbies, not just their demographics and things like that. And finally, understanding your competition, if you're in a competitive market, and most of us are these days, to understand what kind of pricing strategy or pricing tactics they use. How are they selling their product? What kind of brand position do they have? Things like that. Once you figure out those three C's and the growth gear insights, number one, you can move into growth gear strategy, which is where you start to figure out your brand proposition, your unique selling proposition, depending on what you call that, depending on what kind of a marketer you are. We have a thing we call you build a brand house, which is another piece of architecture. But again, understanding what your customers want from that first insight stage and then putting that into practice and how you're going to sell it and build out a pricing strategy and a channel strategy and things like that. So it fits into the third growth gear, which is execution, which is the little M marketing we were talking about before. That's all the websites, brochures for conferences, TV ads, digital ads, things like that.
So when you say process, Doug, you really do mean process. That is something, it's almost, it feels to me like you have to go end to end with that. This is not like a traditional sweet shop where you go in with your little paper bag and you can pick and mix from all the various sweet sort of counters. You've got to do the whole thing. Am I correct with that?
You are correct. The challenge with that, to your earlier point, typically when we go into an engagement as fractional chief marketing officers, we've got chief sales officers too, clients usually want early wins. We almost always put, when we put work streams together on our scope of work, there's some way to capture early wins, because most clients don't want to wait 90 days to do that 30 to 60 days worth of insights. Because if you do it right, in some industries, it's going to take some customer research, some voice of the customer surveys, all sorts of things, really learn what your customers are so you can build those personas to understand how or what's best going to reach them as they go through the purchase funnel, you know, between awareness, consideration, and purchase. And there's, you know, seven steps in a fully developed funnel, but for sake of today, we'll just call it that easy three-step funnel. If you don't follow the process, you're going to be doing random acts of marketing at some point. And that's why we have that term is, but we will try to find some things we think are going to fit into the strategy for a quick win for a client, because they don't want to wait 60 days for some kind of result or action. It's like, I'm paying you guys that much money to do research. What? Not everybody buys into that.
And this is one of the big challenges, isn't it? It's that sense of urgency. I mean, I call it desperation, to be fair, because I think, you know, if you're running a business well, let's be really honest, if you're running a business well, you should not be in desperate straits, really. Right. Okay, there's a controversial first point, but I think it's true, isn't it? If we're all being really honest, if you'd plan this thing from the start, you would not be in the situation you're in right now. So you bring in Doug to kind of almost reverse engineer backwards to the starting point that you should have taken right at the beginning. So let's assume somebody's done that. Let's assume somebody is, that there is a sense of urgency, but they're seeing some quick wins because you've been really smart in the way that you've rolled this out and you've given them some of the low-hanging fruit so they can start to see some gains. You used the phrase, Doug, just a few minutes ago, brand house. Now, that was an interesting one, because I'm guessing, and I'd love you to kind of elaborate on that, but I'm guessing that as you go through this process, yes, there is the tactical gain of, you know, the sales and the funnel and, you know, seeing the personas come to life. But if there's a brand house tucked in there very cleverly, it feels like you're also playing the long-term game too. Is that right?
You are, because the whole point of the brand house is to figure out through those insights what customers want in the way of, you know, what pain points do you satisfy, what can be done to, it actually ratchets up to the roof of the brand house, ends up being either a brand proposition, or I typically use a standard positioning statement in the top of the brand house. It's, and that's the positioning statement is the four, you know, insert target customer, our service or offering appeals to blah, blah, blah. And there's a bunch of different copy points, but it ends up being a very, what I call a true north, to be able to point everything through that lens to develop any piece of advertising or marketing you need after you've done this vetted brand house that ratchets up to the rooftop of either the brand prop or the USP.
So that lens then that you've just used, I'm just picking up on some of these key words, because I know you kind of sort of say, because you live this and breathe this, but I'm just thinking on behalf of somebody hearing this for the first time, I just really want to go deeper into some of these words that you're saying. So that word lens there, obviously just definition of the word lens is that you're viewing something through a certain perspective. If you've got this kind of brand lens, does it become a filter for how you're viewing the yes, no decisions for a certain channel or a certain piece of content or a certain decision that you're making? Because that feels like there's a real kind of clarity there that we're going to get really kind of focused, aren't we, if we're using these lenses?
I'll give you an example, and I don't remember the complete USP for Firehouse Subs when I worked for them. But the target demographic was for my kind of guys. That was how the USP started, the actual positioning statement started, for my kind of guys. And my kind of guys were defined as 25 to 50-year-old males who were sometimes married, sometimes owned a home, you know, had some demographic, psychographic stuff. The point is, every piece of advertising or content we created had to appeal to those guys. Now, the beauty of that is we've got duplicated audiences out there in media, right? The my kind of guy, we would have focused things on sports media, whatever, but those guys, because half of them were married or maybe had girlfriends, whatever, just because you send an ad to all guys, our franchisees would go, well, are we going to get any women? We're getting a housewife, whatever. Well, of course, because those my kind of guys have those associated when they come in as a family. And it also was used because frequently when you're in the franchising business in particular, and I was in restaurants for over 30 years, franchisees will typically complain, I never see our ads. Well, in this case, for my kind of guys, 25 to 54, if a 65-year-old franchisee called me and say, I never see our ads, I go, because you're not the target audience. You're not supposed to see our ads. That means it's working, right? So that lens works a number of ways. And when you use all the points in the positioning statement as everything you develop and every piece of content you do and every marketing activity goes around that lens so that when it comes out the other side, it fits somewhere in your positioning statement, you're going to have growth and it's going to be golden for both you and your customers and your company.
So that lens again, then, I guess, I mean, that's a lovely, lovely example of, yeah, you didn't see the ad because of course you wouldn't because you're not the target. Yeah, people then get back straight back into their box then with that complaint, because where can you go with that? Does that also apply then to colleagues? I mean, I'm thinking again, the CFO, I'm thinking of, you know, the sales colleague, et cetera. If they understand both this brand house, but also this broader kind of having gone through growth gears, that they will actually see the kind of the pattern and the shape of marketing, then they'll understand the context, what it is, but also what it isn't. Is this a way of kind of clarifying for colleagues who don't really get what marketing is and always only see marketing as a small M, actually the power of doing the planning? Do they see it in that way now?
Well, and that's the beauty. When we go in as a true fractional, we hope to sit on the executive team as part of the executive team. And whether they're weekly meetings or monthly updates for the whole team, because maybe the weeklies are with the CEO, whatever, to your point, collaboration to get there. Because actually, when you were doing the insights phase, some of those people and others within the organization would probably have been involved on description of the company and the customer at the very least, and even who are the competitors and what are they doing. So you want to bring, as a marketing person, you want to bring them along for the journey, if you will, so they do understand that. You're exactly right. Typically, with a range of 25 to 54 at Firehouse Subs, most of our franchisees fit within that, so I couldn't use that with them. That was typically more the argument for, like, our CFO or somebody else that was over 55. But I did an interim job for a fried chicken chain here in Atlanta, and they hit the lower demographic area, and that's the same case. They've got franchisees always asking them, why don't I ever see the ads? Well, they're, you know, multimillionaires. They're not a $40,000 to $60,000 household, lower income ethnic person who lives in the South and Southeast or whatever. So yes, it works both internally and within franchisees or other, what I call your sphere of influence within a company and how you build a marketing plan. But you hit a nail on the head. Very, very important to share that with the executive team and bring them along, and then and or present the final to remind them every now and then, so that everybody does understand, so they don't necessarily ask that question all the time. They may still sometimes, but at least they may come in with, well, I know I'm not the target audience, but that can happen.
And you know they know it then. You know they've understood them when they're playing back to you the narrative that you've put to them. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, you kind of, there's the proof in the pudding. So this whole idea then of it being a process, I'm going to come back to the word that you used there about creating this almost marketing process. There feels something quite fundamental here about creating almost a science around what I think by many is seen as an art. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with an art. You know, we need to be creative and innovative, but having a process gives it that real substance, doesn't it, as a discipline. And I feel, I don't know what you think, Doug, but I feel kind of over recent years, you said about, you know, social media being one of the culprits, if you like, of how we've become distracted. Do you feel having a process brings that more scientific rigor? It brings in a bit more accountability for things like phrases like key performance indicators, you know, the KPIs here. It brings a bit more gravitas back to marketing, doesn't it?
I hope so. That is the point, because marketing is, 50% creative, 50% scientific, so to speak, and it's probably more scientific now with digital KPIs if you want to go on that way. But like I myself, I'm not a creative person. There's a reason I've not worked for more than one ad agency. I've always been on the client side because I'm more the KPI guy and accountable, data driven, all that sort of stuff. So it's absolutely important to understand the difference, but they are needed, which is why I'm taking a slight tangent here. Why we, whether we be in the CMO seat, fractional CMO seat, or whatever, why we have agencies and other people that help with that plan. But that process, everybody understands it, is indeed the golden part of it. Because when you do come up with your customers, understand their pain points and all that, you can't, it's not necessarily a set it and forget it. It's, you need to readdress the process like every year. So a year later, you do another SWOT analysis, you do another, what we call kind of a market opportunity analysis to figure out what's where are our sales going to come from. Next year, we've got a neat, interesting workshop we do where we show a grid, 4-point grid. And the lower left corner is for current customers and current market. The one above that is new customers, no, new markets, same type of customers. And then there's the upper right one is actually new market, new customers, right? Completely new product, new offering, new market, new customers. And we ask a CEO, like, so what's your growth plan next year? They'll say, plus 10%. So we put a 10 in the middle of that 4-grid matrix. And then we say, so where are you going to get, which of these 4 quadrants are you going to get that 10%? And ask them to go through the exercise. And typically they'll leave the upper right one blank because we know that's the most not restrictive, most challenging, most risky deal. And you're going to probably get the most from the lower left, your current customers, current offerings, et cetera. But it's a good exercise for them to figure out. And I bring that up because it is a good workshop to help a CEO fine-tune of where they want to go. And that is part of the process and why it was probably part of the process initially on learning about the company and how we do things. And now a year later, things have changed. The market's moved, economy changes, whatever else. And sometimes you can go, okay, we can just do minor tweaks. Sometimes you're like, oh crap, we've got to, reinvent ourselves because the market really changed in the last year. And typically if it's changing that fast, you're going to get that at 6 months or 9 months. But I've found you don't have to change it that often if you've done it right the first time, because the campaigns we've all seen with taglines, if you go back to like in this country, Miller Lite, tastes good, less filling was, I think that must have been a campaign they used for 15 or 20 years in like the 80s and 90s. I forgot, but I was a beer drinker at the time, so I paid attention. And when you have a campaign that sticks like that, that resonates with your consumer, that's what you want. You shouldn't have to change that often, but you need to do a temperature check as part of your process every year to make sure you haven't missed something.
I like that idea of kind of almost bringing the challenge back into a collaborative conversation, because often I've seen it with either clients or, through the years, people have kind of said this to me, which is like, yeah, okay, it's that 10% next year. We've got to see 10% growth. And then it's all down to us as marketing. Where do they think it's going to come from? We're in a flat market. Nobody's buying at the moment, et cetera. And all the excuses and all the kind of reasons why we're not going to hit the 10% come out. Then, of course, then there's a real resistance. The management team say, well, we set you a 10% target. We were super clear about it was 10%. Yeah. You go figure it out. And then you get this kind of discourse between the two, and then almost becomes an internal battle. I love that idea of saying, okay, guys, 10%, that's fine. Put that at the center. Now let's collaborate and figure out the balance or the kind of priorities of where we might think potentially the solution could come from. That collaboration is going to be key
Exactly.
to make
It
this
is.
work, isn't it?
It is. And that in business nowadays, that's really the best way to succeed anywhere is collaborate with as many of your key stakeholders as possible, as often as possible, without, bogging people down in meeting after meeting. That's the other challenge.
Yeah, it is. And I think there's the danger of over planning when you start planning, because you start to feel like there's a real momentum of its own, and then it becomes a beast of its own, and then you don't have time to do any of the execution, which is obviously always the smart way of kind of doing it, is to get that balance. But once you've got your process, so you've been through the growth gears, you've got your brand house, you've kind of got the collaboration going, everything feels like it's in partnership. You've created this process. Is it possible now, because we still want to hit this at some kind of pace, don't we? I don't think that's going away. We still need to see some results coming through. So are things like AI now coming into the equation so that if you find as part of the process, I'm thinking about gathering insights, for example, or your profiling, the customer persona thing that you described earlier, those kinds of things, I'm guessing that AI could have a certain value to in terms of speeding up the process. Are you seeing organizations yet really benefiting from that?
Well, I haven't seen them benefit. I've read about them benefiting. You know, I'll say I'm 80% up on AI education, if you will. So I've absolutely heard of companies benefiting from AI and using it in certain ways, especially on the marketing end. Excuse me. I can share an example on that. A client I had last year, they had three different brand experiences they wanted to for us to help them with. And we ended up writing a total of 21 personas, 7 personas for one brand experience, another. So they had a franchise brand experience, a customer brand experience, and a employee brand experience. Excuse me. And we wrote 21 total for those three. And we absolutely used AI, because once we figured out the prompt, and I say we, I had my counterpart who is in England. That's the project we were working on together. We absolutely used AI to help that. Now, we disclosed that to the customer, to the client, right? And we had to fine tune or whatever. But whether it's content for social media, content for a website and blogs, writing personas, there's certain analysis and stuff. AI is a strong supporter of doing things and making us more efficient. And everything I've read about AI, it's like AI is not going to replace your job, but somebody that knows how to use AI well will. And that's what I believe to be true. It makes the most sense. And even when you think about AI generated content with Google, as long as it's good content, Google doesn't disparage against AI produced content. It does against crappy content. Right. So if the content satisfies the user's need, then it works and the AI is fine. But typically, if you ask the AI, ChatGPT, Gemini, whatever else to do, write something for you, Claude from Anthropic, you have them, you do your prompts, you get the answer, and then you adjust it, you figure it, you do some things to put your take on it, because they get things wrong sometimes, sometimes they hallucinate, et cetera. But just asking for a prompt and then dumping it on a website as a blog, bad idea. But long answer to your short question, but yes, AI absolutely can be helpful for marketers in many, many ways.
Yeah, so it feels like now by doing this, going through growth gears, starting to sort of pause for breath, don't go chasing the numbers or the vanity metrics on socials. This is about kind of just settling down, guys, listening to Doug, making sure that you're doing this thing properly. But by going through this process, what I guess a marketer is doing, senior or junior, is opening up the opportunity to spot the points in the process where something like AI could be an enabler, it could be an accelerator, it could be a scaling point. Love the thing about those 21 personas because, yeah, you try doing that manually, that's a big, long exercise. Yeah. Whereas obviously AI, and repeat, and repeat, and repeat, is going to be then much fast tracking it. But yep. You'd have to understand the process and you'd have to have plotted and almost process mapped. I'm hearing this phrase a lot, mapping the process out. So is kind of process mapping really part of growth gears? Because it feels like once you've kind of settled everybody down and you've gotten to a point of really thinking this stuff through, it is about mapping things out, really, isn't it?
It is. We don't talk about process mapping a lot, but you're exactly right. I think we all do it in our own way, since there's over 120 or 130 of us CSO CMOs. The beauty of Chief Outsiders as a fractional CMO firm is that we can do things the way we want to do it or the way we've done it, but we've got lots of tools and processes and backups and templates and things to use in that as part of satisfying a need for a customer. So absolutely, we do it. It's just not like, that's actually one template we don't have, Neil, which is, as I think about it, a very interesting concept and good point.
Mm. So as a fractional kind of business, I mean, this is something that I think for a lot of people is kind of a new phrase, really, because they do think of marketing as being almost a linear thing that kind of goes down one sort of very, very specific route. And, you know, I start here, I end there, we get some results, we've done marketing, as opposed to thinking of a fractional approach, which is a lot more bringing the specialists in to kind of infill, both within process, but also give you that kind of innovative new template, or that just that slightly fresh, again going back to the word lens, a fresh lens of looking at things. Do you feel, just as a discipline, that marketing should, could become fractional more generally, rather than just purely sort of, you know, client sort of serving? It could actually become from within fractional.
Well, I guess that's hard to tell, because first, the way you describe it is not necessarily always the way it works, which is the first thing I found out about after joining Chiefot Saturday, because I've had project work, I've had interim CMO work, I've had fractional CMO work. One thing I haven't done is really an advisory role yet, but we offer those different services. Typically, the reason people will hire a fractional CMO will be one, the interim. A CMO is out on what we call family leave here in the U.S. to, somebody's going to have a baby or whatever, or they're going to take a sabbatical because of burnout, whatever. That's one way. But most often, we are, like, our tagline used to be, it's cheaper to rent a CMO than to buy one. So imagine, to your point, hiring a fractional CMO to do chief marketing officer work, to figure out the insights, the strategy, get the execution mapped out. And then somebody junior, a director or a manager, whatever, can do it later once we've left. So hire us for 3 or 6 months for it. That's a pretty good sum. But if you were to hire a full timer at our level and everything, it's going to be quite a bit more throughout the course of the year when you add benefits and all that sort of stuff. So typically, we quite often are brought in because we can get them set up for that. It is kind of a set and forget it. To my earlier point, they need to readjust over time. But we can set up the process, and then somebody junior can execute it that they can afford to pay long term and have on staff full time. Because there are, I'm finding right now from a current client, that not having an internal marketing resource can be a problem for even a $10 or $12 million company, because the CEO doesn't want to spend that much time on marketing stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where then the value, when you kind of identify that here's the opportunity, we've been through the growth gears, you've now got the evidence. It's like, guys, if you want to do this thing, you want to take this thing seriously, you're going to have to invest. And of course, invest is not a cost, because you can, with an investment, you get a return. So, you know, the logic then says, okay, what do we want to achieve with this? We've now got the process, we've set this thing up, we've got all the insights to move this thing forward. Now it's time to properly commit to it. But it's nice then, because it's evidence-based, isn't it? It's not just, oh, we need to do a bit more marketing, and Doug says we need to do marketing with a big M, because, you know, Doug says, this is actually really tangible and based on evidence, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, most of the CEOs we work with could be from Missouri, and it's a colloquialism over here in the U.S., but Missouri used to be, or is known as, the show me state. So they won't just take Doug's word for it. Typically, we've got to prove what we're talking about and make things happen and make things work.
Which can apply to any marketer anywhere in the world. If you're not really taking the accountability of get the evidence and demonstrate it, but also show that it actually works, then you're only doing a part of your job in marketing. And I think, you know, almost coming full circle here, Doug, I think by the sounds of it, you're going to really agree with me on this one, is that it kind of feels it's time for marketing to stand up and be counted. I think, you know, we've kind of been for the last 10 years coasting it a little bit. It's almost a little bit embarrassing as a marketer. I've said this on a number of, you know, broadcasts and podcasts. I feel a little bit awkward when I say I'm a marketer, because I'm kind of lumped into the group. And it is most of us, let's be fair, who have kind of said, yeah, we do social media. And that's the view of what marketing is. And I think it's time to kind of stand up and let's actually be real marketers again.
Yes, I agree 100%. And to your point, a lot of just normal, like, friends from the neighborhood or church or whatever else, they're, what's a chief marketing officer? What is that? So if I throw the CMO acronym out there, like, what's that? Chief medical officer? I mean, there's other things. But when you're talking with CEOs and people in companies, it's a little surprising that they don't have a better awareness of what marketing is. And I think you hit the nail on the head, so I agree 100%.
So let's connect people with Growth Gears. Let's get sort of dug onto the radar, the people listening here. How can people connect with you?
So the easiest way to connect with me is to go to chiefoutsiders.com and look for CMO profiles and just put in Doug in the search frame. It'll pull up my profile. I can share my email address. I guess if people can pause it, because with the name like Rife Schneider, it's not an easy email address. It's dreifschneider@chiefoutsiders.com. So that's D and my last name, reifschneider@chiefoutsiders.com. I would love to talk to anybody that needs to expedite their growth and build a growth engine. And that is, and actually what's great about Chief Outsiders is somebody could reach out to me and it may not be the right thing for Doug, but guess what? There's 100+ people that live in Chief Outsiders that might be able to help.
Such a strong, powerful proposition is the, yeah, that suitability and that fit. And I guess it works the same way as well, Doug. You've got to be sort of happy with the people you're being presented with as well. So it's kind of, it's proper partnership, this, isn't it? And this is the way we're going to grow as marketing, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Partnership and collaboration. I think that's the key word, key phrases, and very important for all aspects of an executive team, but for sure on the marketing side.
Great stuff. Doug, it's been lovely talking to you today. And it's really just great to share marketing speak with somebody who kind of is very much saying the same story as I am. So it's lovely to know I'm not alone in this crusade to getting proper kind of growth in marketing through doing big M and little M in equal measures. So thank you again, Doug.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for having me, Neil.